Live from Lower BCC, this is Red Sea Radio, episode 6. We are back again with another episode. Today's Friday, actually, not our usual day. I'm your host, Kyle, here with Jack. How you feeling, Jack?
Good. Very excited.
Very excited for the episode we have today. As you heard last week in our show, we have a big interview today. Again, thank you for everyone for listening and, interacting with us over the past week or so. But let's get into it. We're very excited to have our special guest on the podcast with us today. Fairfield men's basketball head coach Jay Young joins us. Jay, thank you so much for joining us. This is kind of the interview we wanted to do the most when we created
the
show.
We set out for it.
Yeah, so it means a lot to us to have you on here.
No, I appreciate you guys doing this, and I appreciate you having me on. And I'm looking forward to talking about Fairfield basketball with you guys.
Yeah, of course. So we're going to start the interview off a little bit before you came to Fairfield, just to get a sense for everyone who, maybe doesn't know a whole lot about you. You're only in your second season here. So obviously you're a Marist grad. You played lax there, all-conference selection. You had a good career. And then you take your first coaching position right out of college. I know I've seen some interviews and articles about you. You mentioned Jim Todd helping you out along the way. But just for those who don't know, kind of give us the backstory of how you came into coaching and got into college basketball.
Yeah. You guys kind of set it up already for me that I went to college. I was a high school basketball player and outside of in Massachusetts, above 45 miles outside of Boston. And, I just grew up around sports. My dad was a high school coach for basketball and other sports. And then he became the athletic director at a local high school, not the one I attended, but a local high school, for over 20 some odd years. So, I just kind of grew up around it. I was always going to games with either him or my brothers, or he was dropping us off at a gym, kind of just a normal childhood. And when I got to college, I was a lacrosse player. I loved playing basketball still. I just, wasn't good enough to play at Marist, but I became very good friends with the assistant basketball coach there, a guy named Jim Todd, as you mentioned. And Jim had known my father from back in Massachusetts. Jim was from Central Mass and knew my dad. So we just struck up a friendship. And honestly, if he ever needed me to play pickup or help him with a workout or do anything with him, it was a great way for me to kind of stay connected to a game that I loved. And then really what happened was I just kind of graduated from college, and you guys will figure this out pretty soon. You go back home and you're trying to figure out life, and I had some different ideas, but I was always drawn to sports and knew I kind of wanted to, do something that involved athletics. And Jim had left Marist, took a Division III head job in Salem, Massachusetts, and just called me up and said, "Hey, I think this is something that you'd be good at." I wasn't making a lot of money. I think I made like $1,500 for my first job as the assistant basketball coach at Salem State. I had to get a substitute teaching job just to live. But yeah, I did it and really enjoyed it. It was great to work with him. He became a real mentor of mine and a good friend. And, fast forward after a bunch of different stops and a bunch of different levels that I end up at Fairfield. And he had even a more unique career. He got into the NBA for many, many years and was a longtime NBA assistant, and at one point he was the interim head coach for the Clippers. So that's how the whole thing kind of started.
Yeah, and it's important, like, for people listening who might also be interested in that kind of route to, like, you got to start somewhere.
Yeah, you got to start small.
You don't just start coaching and you're just a D1 college basketball coach. You got to start somewhere, and your story shows that with hard work, eventually you'll find your way, and you did here. Progressing a little bit more after that, obviously, listening to your introduction press conference here, you talk a lot about Steve Peichel, who, you spent a lot of time with at Stony Brook and Rutgers. So I just wanted to get, again, for those who don't know, listening to this, what, your experience was with him and how he prepared you to, take a place like Fairfield and try to turn that program around, something similar you did at Stony Brook, and just how he helped you in that, mentorship.
Right. Well, first of all, Steve is a good friend of mine. I was the head coach at the University of New Haven, and I really enjoyed being a head coach. I enjoyed the University of New Haven, but I knew I had other goals, and I wanted to try and be a Division I head coach and probably had to make another move, at least one or two, to get there. And just kind of some things had come up while I was in New Haven that I didn't think were good for me. But when Steve got the head coaching job at Stony Brook, I thought, well, this is a guy, he's young. He has great pedigree coming from the UConn program where he was a captain, coached there, had a lot of success, went with Carl Hobbs to George Washington. And this is kind of a guy that I thought I could attach to and help him build a program. And then, you know, hopefully he would move on. I'd get an opportunity or, you know, go with him. And that's kind of what happened. It took a little longer than we thought. I was with him in 11 years, but Stony Brook was a great job. Met some fantastic people there. And along the way, you know, we just kind of, you know, I followed Steve's lead. He was a roll up your sleeves type of guy, just came to work every single day and grinded away. And we built it brick by brick, had a lot of success at Stony Brook, ended up going to our first NCAA tournament in the school history. And then, you know, a day after we got off the plane, I knew he was meeting the Rutgers people that weekend. And, you know, all of a sudden I got a call from him that he took the Rutgers job. So I went with him to Rutgers for 3 years. And you know, again, and I don't know how much you guys know about the program at Rutgers when we took over, but it was arguably, you know, I'd say the worst BCS program in the country. And it was a great AD there named Pat Hobbs and made a great hire with Steve. And just went with Steve and kind of same formula. Roll up your sleeves, go to work every day in probably the toughest league in the country and build it brick by brick. And if you saw what happened there last year, they would have gone to the NCAA tournament for sure if the season wasn't canceled. And you know, this year in every poll I read, they're a top 20 team. So, you know, just a great man to be around every single day, good friend, and was fortunate to learn so much from him. Yeah. About the programs.
We're both from New Jersey, so we're very aware
big Rutgers. We know a lot
how Rutgers kind of progressed recently with your help of you guys. But we're actually going to talk about that in a second, but I know Jack has a question about Stony Brook first.
So you mentioned Stony Brook's first NCAA tournament appearance. So how did that experience motivate you to do something like that with a team like Fairfield, who hasn't seen the tournament in almost two decades now?
Well, you know, Jack, that's like the end game for every mid-major program, right? It's what you envision. And I can just tell you the excitement, especially at a place like Stony Brook, who had never gone to the tournament. We had just taken over the program right after they had turned Division two, into Division One. They were Division Two for a couple years and then went to Division One. So just the excitement around the town. Jameel Warney, who was a great player for us, I think he could have run for mayor and would have won in a landslide. So just what it did for the university, what it did for our players, just the surrounding community. It was just an amazing time. And, you know, I think everybody, that's the goal of every mid-major program, right? You want to get to that 64 teams or 68 now and be on TV with a shot to, you know, throw something in at the buzzer and run off the court. And that's what makes that tournament so special.
Yeah. So then fast forwarding to Rutgers, kind of just wanted to get maybe your favorite memory from Rutgers and, you know, also just hear from you what it was like coaching against some of the top teams in the country, because I know that was probably a great experience.
Back then,
the
Big East was tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Rutgers was a great place. We took it over and certainly needed a lot of work. I think they had been in the Big Ten for 2 years, if I got that right, 2 years or 3 years when we took over. I think we were year three, so it was 2 years, and they had one Big Ten win. Two Big Ten wins. What wasn't very good, whatever it was. And, you know, it seemed like such a daunting task, because you'd go to practice every day in the rack, which was a really cool old building, and you'd look up in the rafters and you'd see the other teams in the league. And it was just overwhelming. It was, you know, Indiana State, Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa, Maryland. You know, it just went on and on and on. So, you know, but I say this all the time, that I knew that Steve was the right guy for the job, that he wouldn't take shortcuts, that we were just going to kind of chip away at this thing and get better and better like we did at Stony Brook. And that's what's happened. It's an unbelievable league. I tell everybody, it's, you know, people will argue with me. I think it's the best league in the country. Um, you you can turn on an SEC game in February and see empty seats. You can't do that in the Big Ten. Every game is sold out. You go on the road, every game is crazy. There are unbelievable coaches. I mean, you go down the list of coaches when I was in at Rutgers, and the opponents every night, they're great coaches. So honestly, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. Every game was a big game, and it wasn't fun when you looked across and saw some of the other players sometimes. But it was a lot of fun to coach there. And honestly, I kind of needed that on my resume. I needed to be in an atmosphere like that, in a league like that. It really helped me professionally. And a lot of great memories from our time at Rutgers.
Yeah, so you mentioned you followed them a little bit still in the polls and stuff like that. What do you think a team like Rutgers, what do you think their future is? Because they've really grown a lot. I know we've been excited watching them here and there. What do you think their future kind of looks like?
They can be as good as anybody in the country. They really can be. And, you know, once you get in that NCAA tournament and you get hot for a few games, magic starts to happen. You look at Virginia's run when they win the national championship, how they did it, a couple years ago with buzzer beaters. And, you know, the year before they were the only number one seed to get beat by a 16. A year later, they're winning at the buzzer and crazy. So magic can happen. So, you know, anything can happen when you get in that tournament and you got good enough players, and they certainly do. They have very, very good players now who can compete with anybody in the country. So they don't have a limit to where they can go. You know, it's going to take a lot of luck. It's going to take the right matchups, which happens with everybody. But, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if they were in the Final Four. I wouldn't be.
Yeah, and I was excited to see how they would do last year.
Yeah, because they were so hot. They were so hot going into the tournament too.
And you mentioned that they have good players. One of the players we just had a little interesting note to ask you about, Ron Harper Jr. He grew up, he's kind of from around us. He went to like a rival high school of mine. He also went to a rival high school of Taj Benning. I don't know if you ever had that conversation with Taj.
Ron came to a couple of our games last year to see me, and he and Taj know each other. And I was at many Bosco Bergen Catholic games, and it's probably as good a high school rivalry as you can have. I think the year that Ron came to us, they played four times, I want to say.
Wow.
They played twice in the regular season, once in the tournament, and then once in the state tournament. So it was a great battle. Love Ron. He's turned into be a really, really good player and just a tremendous kid.
You know, we were excited to see him play last year. He had a stretch of really good games we were watching every night. But
he's got a lot of talent, a lot of ability, and it's really been fun to watch his growth.
So we're going to transition more towards your first year at Fairfield. So kind of what was the process of becoming the coach at Fairfield? Did you have to, like, interview a bunch of times? Like, were you competing with other people? And how much did it mean to when you accepted that position to finally be a head coach of a D1 program?
Well, yeah, I went through, I remind our AD, who's we have a great AD, Paul Schlickman, who I had the fortune to work with at Stony Brook, but he put me through the ringer. there were several interviews, conversations, but I think that's typical with these jobs. There's only 350 something of them now in the country, I guess 354 of them in the country. And it's so competitive, so many qualified, talented coaches in the country. So I feel blessed that I have the opportunity to be the coach here for sure. But it was a strenuous process. You know, I had been through a few interviews before at different jobs, had come close. When this job opened up, I thought I would have a shot at because I had a relationship with Paul, hadn't worked with him before, but you know, it's competitive and there are a lot of great candidates. So when I finally got the call from him after, I think the day before was a long day on campus. It was really, you know, I said this in the press conference, it was, you know, it's a dream come true, that you worked for, you know, 30 something years to get to that moment and to finally get that phone call was really a cool thing for me.
So then talking about assembling your coaching staff along with you, what'd you kind of look for? I know you have some former people you've worked with. What was like the main thing that you were looking for when assembling that staff?
Yeah, first of all, it's, you know, great people. Some I had really good relationships with, some I hadn't known as well. But, you know, certainly competent coaches, which I have. But at the end of the day, you know, in any profession, you want to surround yourself with great people. And I say this all the time. I don't have a son, but if I did, who would I want to coach him? What would my, you know, not when he's on a shooting streak where he's making every shot, but what about when he's, you know, 2 for 20? Who are the guys you would you want to be around him every day? And I have an incredible staff. You know, Chris Casey and Pat Sellers, I've known for 30 years, and just so fortunate to have those guys on my staff. Brian Duer, I recruited when I was at Stony Brook. Makes me feel old. Watching him get old makes me feel old. Was a great player from us. Love his family. Very close with his family and Brian. He's like a family member to me, and just a great young coach. And then Jimmy McDonald, I really didn't know him, but I was looking for someone with that type of background coming from the NBA and a film type of background. And I was introduced to him through a mutual acquaintance, and he's been terrific for us as well. So I am thrilled to have the staff that I have. Very, very lucky and very fortunate to have these guys around me every day.
Yeah, you mentioned Jim, and we had to throw this story on here. He was actually the only coach that we've had an encounter with before having you on the show today, because last year we were playing
intramurals,
and he showed up. He had a team, and he was just dunking on us for like a half hour.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun. It was cool. So
surprised he got near the rim. His career, like,
it flashed before his eyes.
Closer to the three-point line, so I'm surprised he
was just dunking on Will against us. But it was fun. It was a cool experience. So then another thing we were kind of interested about was on the recruiting side of things. So last year, obviously, recruiting a freshman class going into a year where it's also your first year coaching, was that something difficult because you didn't really have experiences here to sell them on?
You know, I think when you get a job and you get take a job in April, it becomes a little more challenging. And that's when most of the jobs open up, because a lot of the players have already signed or committed. So you're dealing with a smaller pool of players. And, you know, I got a lot of advice from my friends in the profession who had kind of been through it. And the advice that they all kind of gave me was take your time with your staff, and then take your time recruiting, you know, like really take a deep breath when you take over a job. And I know what they meant. Once you get here, you know, you have a couple of workouts, and we had guys hurt, you know, obviously they had some guys left the program. You take a look at the workouts, and then you take a look at your schedule, which was Maryland, USC, Davidson, you know, UMass, Bucknell, some really tough schedule. And you're like, boy, we need to get some help. And what you don't want to do, Kyle, is make a mistake because you're emotional or you panic and say, okay, and you really try and think long term with every decision that you make. So I really tried to take a deep breath when I got here. And there were a lot of guys that we considered, quite honestly, that I just didn't feel were good enough to help us and move the program forward. We ended up taking two freshmen, two transfers, and a grad transfer. And I think all of those, you know, decisions were based on the long-term value of our program, what we wanted to do. We wanted to build a program, not a team. And all, you know, again, you want to find guys of high quality and high character and obviously good players. So I tried to do that as best as possible, and, you know, was really happy. Obviously, we sat two guys out who we think could help us. Chris had a good freshman year. AJ, it took a little longer for him just to kind of transition from a high school player to a college player. But I think you saw some of his talent midway through the season last year. And Vince really helped us. I mean, Vince, if we didn't have him last year, he was just a workhorse with us, for us every night, came to play. You know, guarded the best player, and, you know, just, you know, played hurt a lot. So he really, really helped us. So, you know, I think we got good value out of that class. We need to back it up with another good recruiting class, which I'm really happy with the guys again that we brought in this year. We're deeper. We certainly have more answers offensively. So we just got to keep recruiting, but it's always about the people. It's always about the guys you're bringing on board to your program. And you know, I was really, again, lucky that we've got really good people around us every day and players who want to be coached hard and want to get better.
So you mentioned how difficult it was to recruit without actually coaching it. But how difficult was it your first year to coach a team that you didn't handpick those guys, you didn't recruit them. So how difficult was it to acclimate to those guys and coach them?
You know, it really wasn't difficult, Jack, because we had such really good young men. I mean, they just, you know, did we go through difficult times? Absolutely. You know, we lost 20 games last year. That's a lot of games to lose. But did I ever have a moment where I thought that the guys weren't giving me their all, weren't buying in? No, I didn't have any of those moments. So I really appreciated everything they gave me. I knew we needed to get better for sure. I knew we needed to address some areas on our team without question. We still do. But it was easy to come to practice every day. When you feel that your team is bought in and working for you, it's just a great thing. So was I frustrated sometimes we didn't play better, our execution wasn't better? We certainly didn't shoot the ball better, of course, but love being in practice with these guys. And I said this often that, you know, they came in, and you said, you know, I didn't recruit some of these guys, which I didn't. But, you know, the moment I took the job, they were my guys, and I felt like that, that they wore a Fairfield uniform. I was the coach, and they were going to go to war for me, and I was going to go to war for them. And I really, really truly appreciate how hard they worked last year.
No, it's an interesting dynamic because you see it a lot in college basketball, especially because guys leave so – every year guys leave and coaches get hired in the middle of people's recruits' careers. It's interesting to see how that dynamic works. But, yeah. So has the MAC surprised you at all? Like, I think last year Jeff Van Gundy had an article about saying the MAC is the most competitive league in college basketball. So has the MAC surprised you at all? And how was your experience in, I guess, one of the most competitive leagues in the nation, according to Jeff Van Gundy?
Yeah, it's a very good league. I was pretty familiar with the MAC, coaching at Stony Brook, you know, for 11 years. So we would play a lot of the MAC teams in a non-conference schedule. So I had some familiarity with it. But, you know, until you live with it for a year, you never know. And it's a great league, a league of very, very good coaches and a league of very good guards. I was really impressed with the guard play in the league. Not to say that the forwards aren't good, because they are, but very competitive from top to bottom. You know, you couldn't – the mark of a good league is if you go on the road and play poorly, you're going to get beat. And that's what happens in this league too. If you go on the road, it doesn't matter if you're playing the 11th place team, you play poorly, they're going to beat you. So it's a very competitive league. Really, like I said, impressed with the coaching and the guards in the league. And you know, it's only getting tougher. It's not getting any easier.
Definitely. So, I mean, a specific game that me and Kyle both wanted to get your feelings on was Texas A&M last year in that tournament you guys played. How did it feel to beat them, like an SEC school like that, with multiple Sweet 16 appearances recently in your first season? And did the players trust you more after that win? Was it a different dynamic after that win?
Well, you know, that was one of my best coaching jobs of the year, because I told Landon to go make 10 threes.
I mean, he did.
That's exactly what he did. it was a great win for us, certainly over a name program, coach I respect a lot, and Landon had a career night for sure, the way he shot the ball. So it was a terrific win for us. I think they – you know, we played as hard the two previous nights against Davidson and against USC, but we didn't make any shots. If I don't know if you remember that the night before, Landon was 0-for-9 for against Davidson. So and with some good looks, and that's just what happens sometimes with shooters, you know. So in the next night he comes out and he makes 10, and we just ride him to a win over a good team. But it was certainly a great win. You know, I honestly, people ask me what was my best win last year, and we had some good ones. I thought Oakland. I thought we went on the road at Oakland, a very, very tough environment, very good coach. Their record there is terrific. Landon didn't play in the game, if you guys remember. He was out hurt. We were down the whole game, kind of somehow stole it to get it to overtime, and then stole it at the end and right before Christmas started. So I thought, you know, obviously the name Texas A&M was a great win for us, but if you ask, like, what kind of win I thought I was most proud of, was just the way we grinded against Oakland on the road without Landon. Jesus was great in that game and just found a way to steal that thing at the end and have a good Christmas.
Yeah, yeah, you mentioned the tournament. I thought you guys played really well. Yeah, I think the USC game. I remember watching that at Thanksgiving dinner on my phone, like under the table. I remember that they played a good game there. Also, Oakland, I actually really enjoyed that game. I remember the coach. They had like the ugly sweaters on, right?
And he changed at halftime.
Once he realized that he was in for a game.
But I think that whole tournament, you guys played really well. I mean, you guys played, as you mentioned, Davidson, USC, A&M. I mean, you beat A&M, and you even played USC and Davidson, both very close. Yeah. USC, who has a guy going, supposed to go top five in the draft this year. So, I mean, you guys were playing real competition, playing them close.
Yeah, and even before that in the games to open the season. You also answered our next question, asking about what your favorite win was from the season. We kind of, I thought personally you were going to pick a team, like a win, like the Canisius win at home, or the Niagara buzzer beater, but or even the Monmouth buzzer beater, but it's interesting to get your take on that.
My favorite win, the win I think I'm most proud of is the Oakland one, the way we competed and stole it without landing. But my favorite win was any win, which I don't have a favorite. If you can get on that bus or get in that locker room up one when that final buzzer sounds, it's a heck of a night in college basketball. So I enjoyed them all.
A great answer.
Yeah, a win's a win.
And to one more question before we start to talk about the future seasons at Fairfield, I just wanted to get your opinion on, and it could be non-basketball or basketball related, but just one thing that surprised you about Fairfield that you just didn't know or expect before coming to work here, whether it be on court, off court, around campus, anything like that.
Just how good you guys have it, man. You guys live, you know, the students at Fairfield, I knew it was an academic university, but and I knew it was a beautiful campus. I had a niece who went here. She graduated the year before I got the job. And she would tell me what a beautiful place it is, what a great place it was. But I got on campus, man. It's just such a gorgeous campus. And, you know, from housing to the dining halls to just what a really how lucky you guys are and how lucky our players are every day to go to a university like this.
All right, so let's start to talk about this upcoming season. So obviously the first question that we got to ask is, you know, you can't avoid sports today without talking about obviously everything with coronavirus going on. So we're just wondering, what has the process been like for you over the summer into the fall and now starting the official practice kind of timeline, even though we can't practice right now? You know, given all the shutting down of practice for the past couple weeks and the shutting down of facilities, do you think that'll kind of affect the competitive balance with other teams that didn't have to shut down? Because it's all kind of dependent on what campus you're at.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is just what we're going to have to go through. And I'm hoping that we, in some sense, we got ours out of the way early. You know, this is you've seen it in every sport, right? You guys have seen it in college football and the pros and in baseball. So this is what we're going to have to go through. I tell the guys all the time, our only thing we can do is be as safe as we possibly can, control what we can control. And just, you know, like today we got to practice, so it was a great day. And if there are interruptions, we're going to have to make the most of it. This is going to be a season like no other, but our path may be a little different, but our goal remains the same. You know, and we just got to kind of chip away at it. Again, you can't control these things, guys. It's been frustrating because we've had some stop and goes. But, you know, we've got a great athletic director and a great president. And we're in a time now where the health and safety of all the students is important. So I understand that and we've just got to make the best of it. You know, Marquette, I think, shut down for 14 days yesterday. Mm-hmm. So did in Toledo or something like that. And you're going to see these type of things happen. I'm hoping that we have kind of gotten through some of our issues and we can go through a season uninterrupted. But at some point, I'm also expecting that we are going to have interruptions, whether it's because of something that happens to us or one of our opponents. You know, quite honestly, that's obviously something that you have to consider too. So I just tell the guys every day, like you know, be happy, be blessed. We're blessed to be out on the practice floor today. We can't control what happens, but we can control, you know, being safe, socially distancing, wearing masks, stuff like that to really help ourselves. So that's really just our message. But, it, you know, I'm not saying it hasn't been frustrating with some of the stop-and-go stuff, but we're just kind of going through what every team in the country, I think, at some point is going to have to go through.
Yeah. And I looked at the dashboard today. I think the numbers went down this week, so hopefully that's a good kind of sign going forward.
I mean, you got to take it one day at a time with this kind of stuff because you never know what's going to happen the next day.
No question.
But so obviously with Corona, with trying to keep it down, you play with no fans. So are you concerned at all with playing in an empty arena?
Concerned? Well, everybody's going to have to do it. So if we had to play in an empty arena and someone else didn't, I guess that would be I just think, again, that's what we're going to have. And you know what's funny? When you throw the ball up and the guys start playing, you really don't pay attention to the crowd that much. You really don't. I think the players might do a little more because, you know, in certain atmospheres and that type of thing, it's certainly an advantage. But really, when I'm coaching or when the rest of us and the players are playing, you just kind of locked into the game. And some of the, you know, the crowd stuff, and you block out. Now, there's certainly would love to have fans, but again, I think, you know, we're all going to be in the same situation, so I don't really think it's an advantage one way or the other.
And are you excited to see the cardboard cutouts in the crowd this year?
I am excited to say. I hope you guys have got one of each of you two. So
yeah,
I hope
we'll definitely be there. So moving into more like serious questions now. Obviously, like your coaching style and, you know, your mentor's styles has incredible defensive teams. So how will the addition? I mean, and again, last year our defensive, you know,
one of the best in the country,
one of the best in the
MAC.
So how will the additions of the new players kind of boost that even more? Because we've talked about on this show before, some of the guys that are eligible this year have had a lot of good defensive numbers. I think Caleb has had 100 steals his sophomore year, something like that. I know Chef will definitely aid with that as well. So how will the addition of the new guys take your defense to an even higher level than it was last year?
Yeah, well, they're certainly going to, you know, Chef and Caleb had the opportunity to practice with us last year. So, you know, they're certainly going to enhance that. And you know, also it's another year of, you know, when last year at this time, every drill was a new drill. Every defensive concept, not everyone, but there were a lot of defensive concepts that were new to them. And even though the previous staff probably taught a lot of those things, the way we teach it, the language that we use and to describe something, or our terminology is different. So there was a big learning curve last year when you take over a program and whatever system you try and put in offensively or defensively. So that curve, although we got some new guys, we have veterans now. So today when we hopped into a drill that we had done last year, the veterans got in front and they just knew it. And it didn't take any time. Last year we would have been going over and explaining it, taking more time to do that. So I'm hoping just the maturation of being here for 1 year and guys knowing kind of how we're going to play. We made some progress on that end of the floor. We need to get better on every single end of the floor. But we can even get better defensively, and I think certainly all the new guys will help in that regard.
Yeah, and the way you had the team playing defensively last year, we talked about this on the show a lot too, is it always had us confident that, you know, Fairfield was going to be in every game. Even if we didn't win it, it always had confidence that we could hang with everyone just because of the way they were playing defensively. Obviously, scoring-wise, that's always been the concern for the past couple years. So how have you addressed that going into this season? What are you going to do to hopefully kind of enhance our scoring compared to last season?
Well, I like to score more, you know, and some of that is obviously personnel. You hope enhances some of the additions that we've made. You know, last year, a lot of what we did was, you know, we played slower. We were a very slow, methodical team. We felt that we needed to do that just to kind of win the possession battle, keep possessions low. We knew we were going to struggle offensively, and kind of just what you guys said, you know, let our defense keep us in it. And on the nights, you know, we say this all the time, defense is going to allow us to win the game, and offense is just going to tell us by how much. So on a night where we could make a couple shots, we had a chance to win. And even some nights when we didn't, we had a chance to win. So that kept us around, but it's a tough way to play, guys. It's like handing the ball to your pitcher every night and say, okay, now we need no hits, no runs every single. No, you can't play like that. So We want to play a little faster. We have to play a little faster. We certainly have to make more shots. I think with the additions of some guys, we'll get easier baskets. It's very difficult for us to get easy baskets. Every down screen had to be perfect. Every back screen had to be perfect, we felt. Just, you know, a lot of play calling to generate offense. So I'm hoping that we've got more guys that can kind of, you know, run less plays and know how to play. And you know, it all comes down to shot making. So we got to continue to work on that. But certainly a tempo that is faster paced will allow us, you know, to get some more shots up and more possessions this year.
Yeah, so we want to talk about a couple of the new guys for the next few minutes. So first off, I wanted to get your opinion on Caleb and Chef. So you mentioned, you know, they have a year of experience, even though they weren't on the court playing. They were obviously practicing for a year. You know, what do you expect out of them this year? I know we always talk about on here, too, how excited we are to have Caleb, because then it could allow Taj to kind of play his more true position more, and we really think he could enhance the team a lot. What do you expect out of both of those guys for this season?
Yeah, I'll start with Caleb first. You know, love Caleb, love his leadership abilities. I think he was here for about 3 days last year on campus. It was like he was here for 3 years. He just, you know, has a natural way about him, and he leads by example. But, you know, Caleb started, I think, every game or every game but one at Holy Cross. You know, kind of a Princeton-style system for him to play in. And, you know, he gives us a guy, I say this, point guards wake up in the morning thinking about how to make their teammates better, and he's got that mentality. So he's going to get us easier shots. It's like having another coach on the floor. So, you know, even in practice, you saw that every year. He used to run the other team's stuff all the time. and we couldn't cover him a lot of so just a, you know, a great competitor. One of the best leaders I've ever been around in 30-something years, 33, I think, 34, whatever it is now, years of basketball. But just, you know, leads by example. So I think you guys are going to really like him. He's not overly flashy, but he's just kind of blue-collar, gets it done, and plays on both ends of the floors. And Chef, you know, I think he steps on the floor this year in our first game, and he's one of the best athletes every night on the floor, just a explosive athletically. Can guard multiple positions, you know, kind of got into numbers crunch at St. Pawnee's where, you know, I think he's kind of rejuvenated here. And he's been playing really, really well. And he's athletic, which, you know, I tell him all the time, it's a travesty if he doesn't lead the MAC in offensive rebounding because of his quickness to the ball and his explosive athletic ability. I don't think whoever we play on any night, you know, you'll find a better athlete than Chef. He's a high-level athlete.
Yeah, so two more guys we want to talk about. Two of our favorite players that we watched last year were Allen and Chris Mido. And we just wanted to ask how you think their roles will grow this year, as obviously they grew a lot last year. How are they going to continue to grow this year?
Yeah, so both of those guys, you know, quite honestly, if we had a little more depth last year and we're in a different situation, would have been perfect candidates to redshirt. Mm-hmm. And just get those guys stronger, get some weight on them, allow them a little more time to become college basketball players. We just didn't have that luxury. So we, you know, certainly with Chris, we just kind of threw him to the fire. Allen, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, he took a little bit longer to kind of catch up. But both those guys, you know, again, both athletic, both great length. Chris, you know, I tell Chris all the time, he just could be so special. And I talk about, you know, that I was in the Big Ten for 3 years, and he's got some length and athleticism that you didn't see in the Big Ten. He's just got to gain weight, you know. Everybody's asking me about Chris, and I say, well, the good news is he gained 20 pounds. The bad news is he was 172 pounds when he got I really feel Chris could be absolutely a special player in this league, and one of the really great players that Fairfield ever had. That's how much I believe in Chris. And AJ, you know, like I said, he took a little longer. AJ was from Martinique and only spent 2 years in the U.S. playing over in Florida. So his development was a little slower. His learning curve was a little slower, but really came on. I think you saw some of his ability. He's got to shoot the ball well, better. He's got to have a trick for us offensively. But I love the way he defends and his length and his ability to go to the glass. And he's been having a really good fall. So I'm hoping he just continues in the path and just two terrific kids.
Yeah, definitely a lot of promise with those guys.
Chris Maida, we've been raving about him ever since the show started.
Yeah, and we could tell they put up the new pictures on the Fairfield.
Yeah, the
roster,
website.
The website, and we could tell he got stronger. He got bigger. So. We're excited.
Might have been photoshopped by Chris. Probably by Chris.
But you mentioned too, because we saw he was what it says list him at like 190, 200.
Yeah, and we definitely saw we definitely were like, that's not what he was last year.
Yeah, for sure. So, kind of continuing on, we were just talking about Alan and Chris. They kind of came along slowly last year, and towards the end of the year had more bigger roles and kind of were getting more play time. Is that a philosophy that you have as a coach with freshmen, or was that kind of just a player specific basis?
No, I mean, you know, you play the guys that you trust the most. It's just kind of what coaching is. And, you know, trust is built on a lot of things. Is for, you know, in Chris's case, it was, you know, his ability to stay on the floor for any substantial length of time. He was just, you know, when we got Chris, and Chris will tell you this if you ever have him on the show, he couldn't make it through a practice without just, you know, gasping for air. And it physically for him, it was so difficult, a college practice. So a lot of that stuff for Chris was just his development physically, trying to get him stronger, trying to be able to sustain his energy level for a substantial amount of time. So we kind of started him, you know, he would kind of pick up a foul or, and, you know, we'd kind of stick him back in there, but it was always an issue with Chris of just the length of time that he could play, minutes. And then as the season got on, got a little more comfortable and we strung together more minutes from, and with AJ, like I said before, it was just a matter for him just kind of me trusting him more to play through some mistakes. And quite honestly, I said this on another podcast I did, it comes a time where as a coach, you just gotta let him play through some stuff. You know, I just kind of committed to doing that and got him on the minutes. I think he was probably looking over his shoulder a little bit if he did make a mistake that he was going to come out of the game. We let him play through some more stuff and you saw that it helped him. So, no, it's not really I think any coach plays the guys that trust the most. There's a lot of things that go into playing time. But those guys did a good job for us. And some of it, like I said, was just the physical aspect of everyday practice and the games.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear you say that, too, because we were talking about this question last week. And I remember watching an interview with Chris. He was in high school. It was on YouTube. And he said that the number one thing he needs to work on going into college is, you know, like getting into game shape. Yeah, so... it was interesting to hear that.
We had our first practice day. We went about our first full practice with the whole team there, and we went about 2.5 hours today. And Chris got through the whole thing without any issues and looked great in practice today.
It's good to hear. To hear.
That was last year, and the practice we had last year. If he made it a half hour without, you know, just bending over and really struggling to get through practice, 45 minutes, he'll probably tell you 45 minutes. I'm going to tell you it was a half hour. Tell where he's coming a year. It was just physically for him last year was just so difficult and not any fault of his own. He was, you know, 172 pounds at 6'9". It's tough to do.
And it's great to hear because he is such a – this year he's going to take on such a bigger role with no more Methnani, no more Easy, more – Sangor Peterson, he's going to have to take a lot of responsibility this year in the bigs, with the bigs. So you mentioned that freshman you kind of take on a case-to-case basis. So what do you see with Jalen Leach's season? A lot of people we've talked to and seen online have high expectations for him, but what is his ceiling, do you think, for this season?
Yeah, you know, I've been, again, really – I love our freshman class, and Jalen's certainly part of that. You know, we had a lot of work. I was a very talented offensive kid, but I don't want to sell him short because I've been really pleased with the way he's defending. He's been well coached. He picks up concepts quickly on both ends of the floor. Got a great attitude, wants to learn. So really, really pleased with him. Now you're asking me off after one practice, kind of what we've done, but you know, just watching him in some smaller workouts too, he can really shoot the ball. You know, he can score on all different levels. So his offense, I think, is what's going to stand out to most people. But again, I've been really pleased with the way he's defended and bought in, and I think he's going to be a really good player.
Yeah, and he's another guy. He went to Bergen Catholic for his freshman year, too. So there's another connection there with Taj. We're excited for the freshman class as a whole, too. We had like a kind of preview show on them last show, and it's hard, obviously, because we haven't seen them yet or anything like that. But we're pretty excited for the freshman class as well.
You guys should come over to a practice if they. I think they'll let you. I'm not even sure, but if you want to come over to practice, we'd be more than welcome to have you guys.
That'd be awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah. So we talked about the freshmen. So I want to talk about the seniors. Obviously, Taj and Jesus, guys that I mean, we're juniors, but we kind of feel like they've been playing forever because since we've been here, they've had such big roles every year. So, how confident are you in their ability to lead the team this year, not just on the court but in the locker room as seniors?
Yeah, I was confident in their ability to lead it last year. They were both captains last year. So, again, two of the guys who bought in when I got the job. Zeus has been great. He's texted me after today. I get back to him about watching film later about our first practice already. He wants to get better. I want to send these guys out. Well, hopefully it's not their senior year. It might not be. So if they want to come back, we'll love to have both those guys back. So hoping it's not their senior year, but you know, just Zook, very unique game. That's how I describe it. And people take this as a compliment, is, you know, just a crafty, kind of the men's league, you know, the guy who shows up at the men's league and he doesn't look the part, but he drops 40 on you. You know, Zeus has got that crafty game. You know, he struggles shooting the ball from the perimeter, something he's worked on hard this year. But one-on-one in the post, you know, great footwork. You know, I like his grittiness on the defensive end. So, you know, big fan of Zeus and Taj. Taj is just a warrior. Didn't take him off the floor, played him, you know, out of position. If I asked Taj to guard a five-man last year, he'd do it. If I asked him to play the four, he'd do it. He'd do whatever it takes to win. So, and again, Taj, another guy who really got in the gym. I think he made 2 threes in the non-conference, and then, I don't know, made 14 or 15 conference play, maybe a couple more. So worked hard on that part of his game. And, you know, looks great. Both those guys have done a good job with their body. But Taj, man, he looks great this year. Came in a little heavier, a little thicker up top. And, you know, just big fans of both of those guys and appreciate how hard they work for the program.
Yeah, and as a fan, too, one of the things you notice about them is no one has more heart than those guys, too. So
yeah, they give 110% every.
They're players you want to root for and you enjoy rooting for, so we're excited to see them play. So then kind of just a question to sum things up. We have a few more questions. So obviously this year there's a lot of new players in, a couple players out, and with the weird late start to everything going on, there's a lot of unknowns, and it's been hard for us to kind of gauge our expectations this year of Fairfield. So we want to know, what are your expectations for this team, given the fact that you actually do know, obviously, a lot more than us going into the season?
Yeah, you know, this is going to sound like coach speak, but, you know, my expectations are that we compete every single play. It always is that we, you know, we've got to open up here on November 25th. And all I'm thinking about is how can we be 1 point better than the other team? And that's really what I think. And at the end of the year, winning is just really a result of the process. It's just the outcome of the process. So I never think, you know, go down the schedule, this is a win, this is not a win, this is not, you know, if you'll drive yourself crazy doing that. So, you know, my expectations are that we get better every practice, that we compete every play. And at the end of the year, if you do those things, guys, it's just the outcome of that process, the process of competing the process of working hard, the process of getting better, you have a good record. It just, that's the way it works. I mean, we had some really, really talented teams when I was at Stony Brook with a bunch of all conference guys. And we never talked about, we just talked about who your next opponent was and how we could get better that day. So I know it sounds kind of like an, kind of coach speak, as I said, but that's really the way I think all the time. And you know, again, I'm worried about being 1 point better on trying to find a way to be 1 point better on November 25th.
No, that's a great answer. And just out of curiosity, because you mentioned it, is there any timetable on finding out-of-conference games for November 25th?
Well, we're close to it. I'm hoping we can tell you guys or it'll be announced next week. It's just, you know, the schedule got kind of hijacked this year. We had a non-conference schedule. It was kind of done. And then when they announced the starting date moving back, things got just thrown into flux for everybody in the country, not just for us. You kind of had to start all over again. And there's, you know, you're trying to play because of COVID, some your geographic, trying to take as many bus trips, stay off of planes as you can and that type of thing. So I'm hoping that we can get some contracts back next week and or the beginning of the week after and just kind of have this thing finalized. But it's been a real work in process. Chris Casey, feel bad for him because he's helps with a lot of the schedule, does a lot of it, and it's just phone calls and trying to reorganize dates, and you might have a date but no one, your opponent doesn't. It's been a lot of work. So but everybody in the country is going through the same thing.
So some probably the biggest MAC news on a national scale that we heard this offseason was Rick Pitino becoming the new head coach of Iona. So how did you feel when you heard the news, and are you nervous for your first matchup with him with such a legendary coach?
You know what? I'm nervous that his, you know, I'm never nervous about the guy on the other sideline. You know, that you're nervous that your players aren't competing, and it's not about the coaches. He's obviously a great coach. But yeah, I think it's awesome for the league. There have been a lot of articles on him and Iona and him coaching there already. And if the article is talking about the MAC, it's good for our league. That's how I feel. If you think about, you know, the attention that he's getting and that our league is getting because of it. If he wasn't there, that we wouldn't be getting this publicity. So people will pay more attention to the MAC, certainly pay more attention to Iona. But I think it's great for our league. He's obviously a Hall of Fame coach, legendary coach. So, but you know, it's I don't think I'm going to be, I have a lot of respect for Coach Pitino, but I'm certainly not going to be nervous coached against some pretty good coaches. And again, it's not about the coaches when it's about the players. And hopefully we're going to play well when we do play.
Yeah. And that's an interesting answer too, because, you know, it's going to have a lot of eyes on those games. Say we go there and beat them. That could do a lot for the program, or a player does well, could do a lot for him. So just the exposure, I feel like, is very valuable too.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, Iona's been getting a lot of hype in the preseason because of Pitino and because of people he's been able to bring in recruiting-wise. Is there another team in the MAC that the media might not be giving a lot of spotlight that you find underrated?
Hopefully us.
Yes, definitely. That's a good answer.
Hopefully us. It's so difficult. You know, like, the one thing about the polls, especially at the mid-major level, they're usually wrong. Yeah. I can't tell you how many times I was at Stony Brook and what the end of the season looked like as opposed to the preseason. So a lot of things happen in between, so really don't pay a lot of attention. There's very talented teams, like I said, in the MAC. This thing's wide open. Certainly Siena, I think, brings back the kind of class of the league with on paper. But you know, you look at St. Peter's last year, everybody picked them towards the bottom of the league. Shad did a great job. So a lot of things can happen at this level.
So finally, we got about three more questions left. Turning to kind of the future beyond this season. So obviously the new arena is, you know, delayed a year, but it's coming. Do you think that new arena will help you recruit and hopefully, you know, take Fairfield to another level?
There's no question. Yeah, I think the new arena is a game changer for us. You know, this campus and has everything in place, and, you know, adding an arena to where Alumni Hall is right now as kind of the centerpiece for campus, a convocation center, not only for basketball, but for them, for, you know, other events to happen. Really game changer for the university. So We've been selling the arena since I got here. If you came in my office, I have pictures of it. There's a picture when you walk in. So we've been selling to recruits. I think everybody's excited for us. So, yes, I feel it's really a game changer for the whole university.
Yeah, and we saw that fly through that they had on YouTube too, and those
it looks really good. The renders.
Yeah.
When we've been looking at your recruiting board this year, and we've noticed one thing is you seem to go towards recruit a lot towards New Hampshire and New England in general. Is there something special about that area, or do you have a connections there that you don't have other places that help you find some hidden gems?
Well, I'm from New England, so that automatically makes it. So, you know, recruiting's about relationships, and I've been 30, you know, whatever years recruiting and spend most of it in the Northeast and have a lot of relationships in these areas. Obviously, it makes sense geographically with Fairfield's location. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what's the attractive part of around here is the prep schools that, you know, it's the most competitive basketball league in the country. The players that play there are living there, so they're already used to being away from home, used to boarding. I think, you know, most coaches feel that if the kids from the prep school are just a little more mature when they get to college, they got a little bit of a head start. So it's an attractive avenue to recruit. But, you know, recruiting is about relationships. And I'm fortunate enough to have some good relationships with many of the coaches in New England and elsewhere. So we'll go wherever we need to go to get players. But, you know, I said this when I took the job, that if you draw a 300-mile circle around Fairfield, there's some really, really, really good basketball players around. So I don't think you need to go very far. But, you know, we've gone to Florida. I have a relationship with the assistant coach, a good friend of mine at Florida State, who's helped us in Tallahassee. And it's just a little bit of an area where we got Allen and an area that isn't as saturated with so many schools. So we felt that we want to kind of explore one of those areas where you can maybe go in and get someone where if the player was up here with so many colleges that you might not be able to get. So, it's a great area. If you had to drop a school, Fairfield, Connecticut, pretty good place to drop it to recruit out of.
Yeah, and we were actually going to ask about Florida too, because we saw the Makai Willis committed there this past week or so, right? He's from Florida as well.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really talk about guys, but you probably what you read is probably pretty accurate.
Yeah. So we have one final question to round things off. So kind of just, we started this podcast mainly to drive student engagement, I guess you can call it, with Fairfield Sports, hopefully encourage more students to go to the games and support Fairfield and stuff like that. So to leave us off, final question, what would your message be to students to encourage them to show up in greater numbers to the games and support, you know, you and the team and Fairfield Sports in general?
Well, guys, first I want to say I appreciate everything you guys are doing. This is awesome. I wouldn't recommend starting it during a pandemic, though, next time you want to start a venture. You're starting it during a year that we probably won't have fans.
Yeah.
But I sincerely love the fact someone sent me when I listened to a little bit of your stuff that you did with Tyler, and it was awesome. And Tyler's a great kid. I say kid, he's a great young man. So, you know, unfortunately, it's probably a year that there's going to be no fans there. But in the future, I mean, our guys, there's such a difference in our guys when they know that their peers are in the stands rooting them on. And, you know, it truly does. It makes a difference for them that their hard work is recognized. And it's, you know, it's just a great atmosphere. I don't think there's anything better than on a weeknight or Saturday afternoon to be in the stands rooting your team on, playing college basketball in the middle of February. Or it's just a great sport. It's great atmosphere. And hopefully, it doesn't look like there'll be fans this year, but if there are, we'd love to have you guys out there, but certainly in the future. Love having you guys at the game, and the players truly, truly do appreciate the support that the fans give us.
So well said. So there you have it. There's our interview with Coach Jay Young. Thank you so much for joining us again. This was the interview we wanted to do the most when we made this. So it means a lot to us. We learned a lot. Thank you so much for spending the time with us today.
Yeah, thank you, Coach.
Well, thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Really do.
All right. It's been WVOF 88.5 FM Red Sea Radio. Tune in next Wednesday at 1 p.m. for more. You never know what we're going to get on this show. So make sure you keep tuning in. And as always, go Stags.